This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
A very good morning to everybody in the entire known universe. This is BFM 89.9. I'm Kusa Chong, joined by Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. Wong Xiaoning, didn't see you yesterday, darling.
How? I know.
We missed you.
What did you all? No one to keep you all in check, is it?
No, yes. That's why we went a bit awry yesterday.
Yes, I heard you all from a distance.
We were talking about Italian holidays.
That's
planning
right.
Our travel plans for 2022 and 2021.
Is you must be y'all jealous. Were clearly in fantasy land.
Yeah.
I mean, COVID is still here, guys.
Filed
sadly.
Filed under the category of the brain known as Dreams Are Free. The folder is called Dreams Are Free.
I think, honestly, having a bit of dreams and aspirations to travel is not a bad thing. I mean, to keep us going.
Absolutely. Dreams right? And the universe will conspire for you.
Wow. So deep words. Only for the 7 billion people who listen to us every morning, right?
Seven and a half. So what does an alpha female do on a day off?
She roasts chicken, I think.
She roasts right? chicken. She well, if it was a real day off, the alpha female would normally go for a run in the morning.
Okay.
She would do her run.
This is the inspired woman,
yeah,
part one. Okay.
Who gets up at 6, goes running, ends up in the market actually, loves going to the local market, buying some stuff and usually cooking the whole day and then reading this very interesting book on Tibet. That's what the alpha women would typically do on a day off.
You see, it doesn't sound like there's a difference between alpha or a non-alpha female, to be fair.
I think on your day off, everyone should just let their hair down and just do what they want to do.
I think it's the extent of granularity. The alpha female will go 4 levels more.
Okay. You mean just more intense? Yeah. So instead of a 5K, do a 20K. That's the kind
Or they will go to the market and then gather economic data. You know what I mean?
I do. I actually do.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
I check on prices and then I ask them how business is and what sells and what doesn't sell.
So did you glean anything from
your
market?
Yes, cucumbers have come down in price. No joke. It used to be $6. It's $2. Tomatoes have come
down
in price. Yeah, onions have also come down in price. At one period, there was clearly food inflation and I noticed it and now it's come down a little bit. I don't know whether it's due to weather patterns or resumption of supply. So you're right. I do glean economic data from my little
quite
trips
sad,
everywhere.
Actually,
it's not sad.
It is
this is called
sad.
Channel checks, guys. Channel checks.
Channel checks. What's that?
Channel checks. Channel
yeah.
checks.
This is how you verify sources.
Right.
Yeah. It's just me. I'm the geek. All right. Anyway, what do we have today?
Well, so we're going to talk about She Session. Well, that doesn't quite apply to Xiaoning. She's up and running full. But we are really talking about this issue that women are affected a lot more in COVID than men
are. Of course. Definitely.
We'll deep dive the numbers.
Good.
We'll geek it out a bit later.
Okay. Of course, we're going to go through all the international headlines, including little Biden's trip here and there or planning trip. And what are we having next, Chong?
I will be talking about what has become of a 6'5" Jewish gentleman's at one time pipe dream. Yes. Okay. So that's
Jewish
to look
gentlemen
to.
And women at
a
work.
6'5".
Got it.
Okay.
Jewish gentlemen. That's after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was a Smashing Pumpkins with 1979, the same year that the Iran hostage crisis was ended.
What were you doing in 1979?
How old were you, Chuang?
I was. I wasn't born yet.
Nonsense. What a lie.
Don't lie so early in the morning. Not good for you, Trump.
And I was not yet a barefaced liar. But I am now.
I'm sure you were a little boy running around by that time.
Yeah.
You think he was running around naked, you think?
With no clothes on. Yeah. Stuffing his face, eating Penang cocker food.
I cannot imagine you as a child, Chuang. You would have been quite adorable in its own little way.
Yeah.
Char Kway Teow must have been quite sticky on the skin.
Yeah, ugly, but yes, and irritating. So Adam Newman. Adam Newman was the guy I was talking about earlier, right? He was 6'5", child of immigrant parents, very, very charismatic, very flamboyant, a very good talker. He basically, he sold the Wall Street on the idea that WeWork could become the next big thing. And he did, up until the time when he didn't, then he just imploded.
I mean, the moment I think it died was when the IPO failed, right? It was supposed to be the golden IPO.
Yeah.
Everyone expected it to do so well. I think they filed papers in 2019 and then it just spectacularly crashed and burned.
I think at the top of its valuation was about $45 billion. The biggest investor in that was Masayoshi Son of SoftBank.
Yeah, and now I think SoftBank has written off the whole valuation
thing.
Already.
Okay. So yesterday we talked about Stripe. Stripe is now $95 billion US dollars, right? But WeWork itself is trying to come back, and the new CEO is this guy called Sandeep Mathrani, and he has told his people, we've done basically working spaces really well. Let's get out of everything we've done in the past and just focus on back on what we're doing. And it's all about the flexible space for WeWork.
I think it's a great time because the conversation now is that they're trying to go back into the market through a SPAC. And Sandeep, his background is a property investor. He's a real estate guy. He's really decided that we should focus on it. And if you recall the history of Adam Neumann, he went crazy, right? He did all sorts of stuff. He opened a school. He basically was lavish, and he did quite a lot of dodgy stuff. Like he bought properties and leased it back to WeWork. So I think all that just imploded. And that's why I think they've just recalibrated.
Yeah.
And there's really an opportunity time now because as people are trying to get back into the office, WeWork might be well positioned to tap that opportunity, I think.
I'm just curious whether they worked out some of the kinks, because I remember being quite vocal about the WeWork listing on
You're
air.
Always vocal.
Yeah, that's true.
When are you not vocal about
Why
anything?
Why not?
Good la, it's good.
It's good. But the point is about, you know, one thing about me, I hate it when companies don't make money. And it's okay to not make money for
Amazon
a few years.
Didn't make money for decades.
Okay. The problem is, how soon are you going to break even? At what point is the tipping point, right?
Yeah.
And I found that what I didn't like about WeWork is I couldn't figure out the business model, which was, okay, we take long-term leases and then we essentially rent out very short-term leases, as much as like a day or maybe a month, or at most, I think maybe a year. So there was clearly a mismatch, right, between the duration of the lease I as a landlord take versus you as my tenant. Mm. And to me, that mismatch meant just way too much risk, and how do you value it? So that was something I couldn't figure out, okay? And I was wondering, what are you paying for, guys? Are you paying for a disruptor when actually the reality is he's just an old-fashioned landlord with nice furniture?
Exactly. Because if you compare, there are traditional rental office space. Regus is an example.
Yes, and they don't trade at these kind of valuations.
Absolutely. I think the valuation for IWG, the owner of Regus, was like 20, 50 times less than what WeWork was valued at.
I love it that you both are so excited about this whole thing. I'm just sitting here like observing you guys. Like it's like...
It's interesting.
It's
fascinating.
So two fish in an aquarium.
No, so that's my... So the point is, have they worked out this, you know, mismatch of business models? Because as long as you don't, reality-wise in the long term, are you really going to make money?
You guys are both missing the point.
Doesn't matter. It's hype, isn't it?
It's hype because you... Look, Joe Biden, okay,
I don't know, at 6:12 in the morning.
He wants to face with China, but that's...
Okay.
So he will soon be unleashing $1.9 trillion of stimulus. That's like more than last year, right? And according to Goldman Sachs' economist, Jan Hatzius, that could rise to $4 trillion, right? It doesn't matter. Specs are the order of the day. That's what Chamath Palihapitiya, I can pronounce his name right.
Well done.
Yeah. Specs make a lot of money, not because they're income generating, but because they buy into the hype of a couple of $1 trillion in stimulus spending.
But let's talk about the business of WeWork. WeWork is an interesting business as we get back to work, right? There are going to be many people thinking that, hey, I don't need so much office space. I'm going to adopt some flexible working arrangement. So I perhaps want to have something a bit more flexible, and WeWork might be an interesting solution proposition, no?
But you don't need them because you're at home working anyway. Your house already exists.
No, but some people just enough. They really can't stand it anymore in the house. It's suffocating.
That's
right.
I can't take it. I think people are going to converge and go back to office, but maybe not at the same level.
Yeah,
as it was
maybe
before.
Not the five-day week kind of thing that we used to from 9 to 5, but a version of that. But Chuang, I disagree in terms of what you just said that $4 trillion is just going to drive every asset class. I think yes, you're right for the moment, but everything reverts to the mean.
There'll be a fall-off point, of course.
Yeah, there will be. And the point is when they start, of course, the geek in me will say when they start raising rates, right? Or indications are they're going to raise rates. And, you know, do you really want to hand over money to a company that doesn't know what it's supposed to do or might not know what to do?
Exactly.
Which is a spec, right, at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's a spec. It's a blank check company. So you don't want to go to a company. You're not going to rent space from somebody who's going to just spray the whole office full of Dettol surface cleanser, right? And then charge you money for it. I can do that myself.
It's interesting.
Everybody head over to Chuang's house. He's probably got cheaper rentals. You're going to side hustle, Chuang.
But it's interesting that if WeWork is going to be positioned as a traditional office rental space that is using a spec vehicle, because it's quite a conventional business if you think about where it wants to do and kind of go back to basics.
WeWork was It's a landlord.
WeWork was never a technology company.
With just some furniture.
Yeah.
But nice lah, the furniture.
Okay, nice but coffee, still landlord.
Good coffee. And also a beer quota.
Ah, that's the most important
four
thing.
4 beers a day, apparently.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's no good. 4 beers an hour is fine. On that bombshell, it's now 6:14. We'll come back with a session. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Beach Fossils with This Year. So, she sells seashells on the seashore. No, Shisession. Well done. Okay. Shisession is a story, the subject of which is written by the Thomson Reuters Foundation. And Thomson Reuters Foundation usually write stories which either make you feel all warm and fuzzy or really angry. So what is it going to be this time?
Okay, so Shisession essentially is saying that women have been more impacted during COVID than men with respect to employment and also GDP and economic impact. And it's showing through the data. So to answer your question, feeling a bit, you know, not so good about it. Now, if you look at the data, if you deep dive further into the plight of women in terms of employment, actually the issue here is it's mothers as opposed to single females. If you look at the data recovery, fathers are about 1% less from pre-COVID in terms of labor force participation. Single or non-parents don't distinguish between male or females. It's about 2% less. But if you deep dive further into mothers, it's 4.5% less than where it was pre-COVID. So if you deep dive further, really mothers are affecting and bearing the brunt most.
So the moral of the story is don't have children.
No.
So what is
the moral of the story is that we should look at the structures of work and the social protection that we offer to women to prevent this from happening again and also for encourage for more female participation in the workforce.
That's what was exactly what I was about to say.
Well done.
Yeah.
And this is actually interesting because, you know, International Women's Day was held, last week?
That's right.
And I did a breakfast grill with YB Hannah Yeo, who is the, of course, Member of Parliament for Segambut, and Datin Paduka Che Asma, who is also a chief executive, was a chief executive, excuse me, of Yayasan Kebajikan Negara and now runs an NGO called Orphan Care Foundation. And they had some very, I would say, sobering data for us. And because your point, Philip, is more global data, but I want to bring this back home. Mm. And it's so true. It's relevant here in Malaysia. And they told me, like, basically, at the height of MCO, 1 in 10 women were unemployed. Okay, so that's 10%, far higher than the national average of 4.5% currently, albeit that was data in the first MCO. Added to that is also an ISIS research that came out in the second quarter showed that nearly 2 out of 3 of the employment declines were faced by women. So yes, women feel the brunt of it. They definitely did. Now the question is, as our economy recovers, right, as we go through this, you know, GDP growth of 7% or 6% for this year, are we going to have that unfortunate K-shaped economy in terms of job recovery? So some people get back onto the jobs very easily, but women get left behind. Now, how do we prevent this from happening? And the conversation actually resides on childcare. What are we doing to help these women get back to work? We need to provide very sensible, very well-priced and good childcare. Otherwise, women will always feel that they need to make the sacrifices and stay at home and look after their kids. Because that's a reality.
Yeah. Okay, so my viewpoint of this is much more macro in nature, much more zoomed out. Okay, we've got a global population of, 8 billion people? And basically, birth rates have been going through the roof for at least 100 years. Okay, this might be a good time to analyze why, and the whys and the wherefores of why we are parents and we are having children. If we decide to have children, there's going to be certain sacrifices to be made. If we do decide to make those sacrifices, we've all got to realize that the world is not a place that we can change easily. It's good to speak in theoretical terms. It's good, right? Mm. But in practical terms, how difficult, how easy is that going to be?
So,
I don't know.
Yeah. So
if you and your wife are going to have children, you've got to realize there are certain realistic expectations
to be had. Yes, and I totally agree. I mean, and I want to state here that I'm not a parent. Okay, so I have no real life experience. And that's a fact. So maybe some of the pains I observe is just observations. It's not my reality. But I think what we can do from a policy perspective is to change certain things. One of which is to look out at our current Employment Act, which I think does not help women get back to work or help them stay in work. One example is the way we look at maternity leave. Now, whatever seen done, when an employer looks at a woman, and especially if she comes in pregnant, at the back of their mind, they're thinking, ah, she's going to go on maternity very soon. That means for 3 months, you know, she's going to be out. Now, one way to overcome this is to follow, like, for example, the Scandinavian model, where the leave is not maternity or even paternity, is joint leave. So in other words, you as a father, you can step up. You can actually participate and take over some of that maternity leave and stay at home. So this is to overcome people from, like, you know, in their back of their mind having some gender bias, for example.
Yeah, so I want to just say, you made a point that it is going to be the unit of the family that will have to make decisions on sacrifices. Now, I put the head of the government, right? And if you look at data, if you are able to equalize the labor force participation between men and women, you could add 10% more to the GDP over 10 years.
Yes.
So I would then be incentivized, look, you're going to make the choices you make, but I want to make sure that I give you the tools so that I reap the opportunities. Now,
and one classic example of this is Japan, okay? Because Japan, let's face it, right? It's 2 decades of lost economic growth. And, you know, economists there say one of the reasons for that is because the female participation in the workforce is so low. So when 50% of your population isn't contributing as much as they can or should for whatever reason, definitely the economy pays a price. So the same thing should be our question, should be the questions we ask in Malaysia. How are we getting women back into the workforce and helping them? Whether it's a change in Employment Act, whether it's a conversation to have in the household with your spouse, have the change in terms of the education system so that you remove all these biases, so that society doesn't say it's the job of the woman. It's not the job of the woman. It's everyone's job.
Okay, I've been saved from giving an answer by the twirling finger, okay?
although one thing to say is, if you see what's happening around the world, the US, for example, the Republicans, they are talking about child tax credits. And that's a way to say, look, I want more people to participate in the workforce, but I'm going to incentivize you through tax credits. And the question here is, in Malaysia, is whether you expand that kind of solution, which is already there, but maybe perhaps not much.
Yeah, so I guess putting the ball in the court of the policymakers presupposes that you've got good policymakers there in the first place. In the absence of that, one has to take control by oneself. After this, we'll come back with the news and more on this kind of matters. After this, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, John Jett and the Blackhearts with I Hate Myself for Loving You. I'm Koo Soo Chung, joined by Wong Xiaoning and Philip C.
I wonder if that's related to your job.
No lah, it's actually just life. Love hate relationships.
Right,
such
okay.
It's the norm.
It's the norm, not the exception. Okay, 6:40 in the morning. This is when we talk about some international news, and so let's talk about who else but Joe Biden.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken started his first overseas trip since taking office. So our friend is expected to arrive in Japan today, and he's going to have a little chat with his counterparts. Now, the basis of this little meeting is to reassure allies after the Trump administration accused Japan of being a security freeloader and sought a fivefold increase from Seoul in the money it spends to host American military personnel. So here, basically, Biden's doing a little bit of a recovery trip or like a restore goodwill trip.
Yeah.
Is that the way I see it this way?
Yeah, because he was so parochial. He was so inward looking, right? So now Joe Biden's people have told him, look, it's a 650 million population market. Sort it out, right?
Yeah, be nice to everybody.
Be nice to them.
Yeah, there's never any harm in being nice.
That's right. I think prior to that, he already held the first virtual summit with Quad partners, Australia, India and Japan on Friday, all of whom have their own tensions with China, right? So the statement released after the meeting referred to an open Indo-Pacific region, indicating talks were a show of unity against Beijing.
And we will be discussing this later at 7:30 in the morning with Dr. Adrian Ang Eugene from the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies at the NTU in Singapore for a little bit more detail in terms of this Quad meeting and this meeting between US and China in the very frosty Alaska.
Yeah, it's a beauty contest because China is already here and America says, I'm pretty too. Okay, let's talk about Facebook. Now, Facebook has... Now, it looks like the journalists have got their way because now Facebook has done a deal with News Corp in Australia. And we know that in Australia, the journalists are very, very strong. It's a very old institution, industry over 200 years.
Media is powerful, right?
Media is powerful. And they have long griped at the fact that Facebook uses their news without paying for it. Is this something that we can see?
I wonder if it's not journalists, but News Corp's CEO, Rupert Murdoch. because
I think they've learned Nyanyo already.
His
friend is as sharp as can be, making deals all the way. You know, never put it past these
That's right.
Yeah, gentlemen.
Although he's due for retirement. He's going to retire soon. But honestly, his empire is incredible. And this deal, I suspect, just reflects how much muscle he can flex.
Yeah. Well, if you got a name like Rupert, I'm sure you got a lot of muscles.
Excuse me, but I don't know whether this is a model. And I think this is the bigger question, right? What are we going to see more and more of this beyond Australia?
It's got to, because it's going to set a precedent, right? Mm. Yeah.
And I think the reality is that, you know, all this while when, you know, you've got digital and you've got Facebook and all these, I would say, disruptors, it has definitely had an impact on traditional media. But let's face it, it costs money to produce good stories. It's extremely hard work.
That's looking at you, Wong, and you cost a lot of money because you bring a lot of substance to the table.
I wish I cost a lot of money.
Facebook should pay for you.
Well, that's the question about how do you monetize your content. And I think, as you said just now, this is not an Australian story. It's gone global. Yeah. Already there have been deals done in Spain and France with respect to the media. So reflect, even if you look at our media industry here, some people pay for content directly to the actual publications.
Yeah, like Malaysia Kini is an example, right. Malaysia Insight, right? Exactly. They're paid subscription models.
Star as well, to a certain extent, certain limited. But this is the reverse where you are going to be paid by the platforms for the content. So I'm very intrigued to see which revenue model will prevail.
About ruddy time, I say. Okay, now let's move on to a Bloomberg story which cites one person familiar with the matter.
As opposed to two or three.
And you can be sure because it's Bloomberg, it's someone very highly placed. But anyway, so the Chinese government wants Alibaba, aka Jack Ma, to sell its stake in South China Morning Post because it feels that Alibaba is too influential in influencing public opinion in China.
Last few months, it doesn't seem like Jack Ma is getting along well with the Beijing powers to be. Remember the Ant financial listing that didn't happen?
Yeah, they just pulled the rug over the ants.
Are they saying that he's got too much influence, like, okay, in the financial space, payment system space, tech space, and then now media space?
There's a lot of things we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know whether Jack Ma got this big because of the Chinese government or in spite of the Chinese government. And then, of course, Jack Ma being as vocal as he is, maybe they don't like the direction he's going because they think he's getting too big for his boots. And then they pull the rug on him saying, look, we made you. Now we pull you back. Well, we don't know a lot of things.
Yeah, I want to draw parallels to Jeff Bezos' stake in Washington Post.
Mm. That's a personal stake, though.
That's a personal stake. But still, you have Jack Ma with SCMP and Jeff Bezos with Washington Post. I guess here the issue is SCMP is based in Hong Kong. That is really a lightning rod now for China as it tries to tighten and grip itself in the elections. So perhaps that's why I think China is kind of putting on the screws for Jack Ma.
That's definitely part of the reason. But can they do that? Should they do that? And will they do to the rest of the region where they've got very, very huge influence, for example, in Malaysia?
Yeah, I think it's also quite telling in terms of what happens to SCMP and what's the editorial direction going forward then. Because it is one of the papers to read.
It is very thought-provoking and thoughtful, I must say.
And you've got to pay to use it, so that's why.
All good journalism costs money.
The twirling finger has appeared. Okay, 6:46, we'll come back after this with the local news and social media, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Beatles and Paul McCartney with Can't Buy Me Love, a phrase which continues to ring true until today. Now, it's the time of the day when we look at the local news and some social media, but because we've been inundated with social media remarks, we haven't had time to deal with any of them because we've just been spoiled for choice. So instead, we'll do the local news. What have we got out there?
Can I start? And it's not local. It's actually from the UK Financial Times, of course.
Ayo, why so atas lah?
Because it's just me lah. It's like 6:46 in the morning. Oh, sorry, 6:50 in the morning. I just wanted to start on
time two.
Yeah, you know, UK style.
All right.
And guess what? Elon Musk, remember him? He of, I think, number 2 billion billionaire in the world. He's changed his job title.
To?
He's still chief executive of Tesla. But he announced on Monday that he's now Techno King.
Ayo.
I know. Techno King of Tesla.
Yeah. Techno King of Tesla.
And his CFO is Coin Master.
Master
of the coin. Crazy.
Well, I mean, whatever. When you're the second richest man in the world, you can call yourself whatever you want, right?
Okay, my turn next. Okay, I'm gonna offer a paradoxical juxtaposition. I'm going to triangulate. Okay, and I'm gonna use big words because you just started with Financial Times. I'm gonna triangulate the edge with Tatler. Okay, now the edge goes with the fact that Malaysia has reported 1,208 new COVID cases yesterday, lowest so far this year, and that factoid goes along with Tatler's six most beautiful beaches to visit in 2021. And top of the list is Datai, in Langkawi. Okay, that's my offering this
so
morning.
So what's your juxtaposition there?
Yeah,
I'm intrigued to know how the 1,200
cases
linked
to Datai. Yeah, what is this all about? You're hoping that interstate travel will allowed?
Three words. Yeah. Can go traveling.
Okay. I have three words. Please dream on. Okay? Because at this moment, no interstate travel is allowed.
Hisham's listening, la. No, Hisham's listening.
We've got to keep the numbers below, I think, 100, two digits. That was the advice, right?
Yeah, they did say that they expect the cases to drop to 500 by May.
Okay, but then wasn't there some
news? Didn't he say there's going to be like 18,000 cases in May? You see, like this one. You got statistics and then you got damn lies. Which one are you going to believe?
Well, I prefer statistics.
Well, let's talk about statistics because vaccinations are proceeding smoothly, 300,000. A whole bunch of stats coming out. Let me just go through that very quickly.
All right.
300,000, 24% nurses, 22% doctors, 23% medical assistants. Pretty good numbers. If you look now, Selangor is the number one state, right, that's got vaccinated. A million vaccines are going to come from Pfizer. Mm. And so those are the key pieces. I think what you're seeing here is that really the phase one is showing that it's really being vaccinating all the healthcare professionals. Only 302 government officers and elected representatives have been vaccinated.
So in summary, 300,000 Malaysians have been jabbed.
Yeah, that's right. But I think in page two of the New Straits Times, 1.4 million of vaccine on vaccine wait list must give vital data. So they've omitted health background, current address when registering on their information on the My Sejahtera app. So, you know, for those who have not completed it, please do so. But I think it's also a conversation about the usefulness of My Sejahtera. What does the government do with all the data they've collected on the My Sejahtera app, which I think for a lot of us, we have been consciously, you know, zapping in when we go into buildings or we go into premises. And I'm sure that data is extremely useful because, let's face it, COVID-19 is going to be with us for a while. And this is a conversation that we're going to have with Dr. Lau Cheng Han, Chief Data Scientist at LEAD. And that's going to be happening at 7:45. It's also the poll we are running about whether you think My Sejahtera works, you know, whether it's useful.
Oh, yeah. Because basically there's issues with regard to contact tracing and your privacy, right?
Yeah.
And I can tell you, anecdotally speaking, my friend who heard of this underground party that happened last week. And you know what the cops did? They just basically they went to a nightclub after, I think, 10 or something at night. Mm. And there were so many people that were zapping into this place, which was, of course, the doors are closed, right?
Mm.
And then the cops just went and said, look, the underground party, all of you go to jail.
Was it the one
quite rightly
fine?
So, but then they used the app to get this.
Did they use the app? Or was it just because there were lots of people and it was very noisy?
So the police, I think,
which is old-fashioned detective work.
So three government bodies have access to the app. The police, the customs, and I think maybe the army or something like
that. Was that club fined 1 million? I saw somewhere
something like that.
We should actually get this story confirmed, whether the data that is being collected by My Sejahtera is used in any other way. I remember some issues about this.
That's right.
But this is how they're using it in the right way. Because
I wonder whether we should get this confirmed, you know, whether it's 100%.
And I think we're going to have a conversation on that later today. Okay.
So one more thing that the My Sejahtera app doesn't have. It doesn't give you the multiple choice of whether you want to opt for the Pfizer vaccine.
Because you can't.
You can't.
Or the AstraZeneca
vaccine.
There are
no choices at this current moment.
And you might not want to do the AstraZeneca vaccine.
No, at the moment it isn't, right? Because we're talking about vaccine equity.
I think the Minister Khairy was very clear that we shouldn't pick, and he has also led by example by saying that he will not be picked, and that's why he's getting his jab on the Sinovac on Thursday.
So he's getting jabbed by the British. Chinese one.
Sinovac.
I thought he was going to do AstraZeneca.
He's Sinovac.
So maybe he'll get jabbed by the Chinese and the British, but not the Americans.
Anyway, I think one more story.
You just won a vaccination.
I think you do, yes.
I think one story just to highlight in the Malaysian Reserve, EPF contributors are now turning to Bitcoin.
So they take their money out and then they bet it on Bitcoin.
Yes.
$61,000 of Bitcoin.
Invest.
That's what we are hearing anecdotally in the Malaysian Reserve, page 4. And this doesn't surprise me because if we talk about the 1.9 trillion US stimulus, they were forecasting about 10% of that was expected to go into the markets and Bitcoin.
But I have some reservations because EPF is for retirement, okay?
Yes.
So, you know, you have to match your risk and reward. You're thinking about long term. And here there's no long term with Bitcoin. Or the risk profile is so scary, I have no words for it.
Okay. 6:55, we'll come back after this with the news and then the more serious side of the morning run. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.